And then there's Stainer, Garvai thought. That man is scary. It's just not natural. He's a Carizian and a heretic, and I think he could probably talk a slash lizard into eating out of his hand.
His lips twitched a half-smile, yet he wasn't certain the thought was entirely hyperbole. Michael Stainer had never once apologized for the Church of Carus's schismatic fervor. He'd drawn the line between the Church of Carus and the Temple Loyalists as unflinchingly in every sermon he'd given as in the very first, and no one who'd seen and heard him preach could doubt his unswerving devotion to that schism for a single moment. And yet, for all the adamantine power of his personal faith and bitter defiance of the vicarate and the group of four, he radiated a gentleness, a kindliness, only the most bigoted could deny. Many of those bigots did just that, but Garvai had watched Stainer walk down the nave of cathedrals and churches throughout the capital. He'd seen the foreign archbishop, the apostate heretic, and servant of Shan Wei pause to lay his hand on children's heads, speak to those children's parents, stop entire processions for a word here, a blessing there. It must have been a living nightmare for the people responsible for keeping him alive, because there was no way anyone could have guaranteed there were no hidden daggers in those houses of God. Yet he'd done it anyway. He'd reached out, embraced, welcomed. And everyone in each of those cathedrals and churches had heard the tale of what had happened to him in Telesburg Cathedral. They knew that he knew, from direct and personal experience, how easy it would have been for someone to repeat that attack. And knowing that, still he chose to walk among them, risk exactly that. Archbishops weren't supposed to be like that. They were supposed to be regal. They were supposed to visit their archbishoprics once a year. They might celebrate Mass in the cathedrals adjacent to their palaces, but they didn't go to small churches like St. Catherine's or the Holy Archangel's Triumphant. They passed through congregants like the princes of Mother Church they were, not stopping to bounce a baby in their arms, or lay a soothing hand on an ailing toddler, or bestow a gentle blessing on a bereaved widow. They dispensed Mother Church's rulings and justice, and they governed, but they didn't scoop a grubby 6-year-old up in their arms, laughing and tickling, heedless of their exquisitely tailored cassocks, when they went to visit one of Mother Church's orphanages. Coruscant had no idea what to make of him. For that matter, Garvai wasn't certain what to make of Stainer himself. He wasn't accustomed to encountering saints, especially, he thought more grimly, in an archbishop's vestments. Of course he's not a saint. He'd be the very first to insist on that. But until something better comes along... The sound of an opening door pulled him up out of his reflections, and his eyes narrowed as Merlin Athrawis stepped into the council chamber. The Sajan crossed to the conference table and bowed courteously. "My knights, thank you for allowing me to speak to you," he said. "I don't really think there was ever much probability that we wouldn't allow you to speak with us," Anvil Rock said dryly. "Perhaps not," Merlin smiled. "Still, there are appearances to maintain."
"Indeed there are."
Anvil Rock cocked his head thoughtfully.
"I'm sure you won't be surprised to discover that we've been speculating amongst ourselves on exactly why it was you wished to speak with us, Sajan Merlin. Am I correct in assuming you're here on the Emperor's and the Empress's business?"
"You are, of course."
"In that case, I suppose we ought to invite you to sit down," the Earl said, pointing at an unoccupied chair across the table from his son and Doyle.
"Thank you, my lord."
Merlin unhooked the scabbard of his katana, laying it on the table in front of him, then sat and folded his hands on the tabletop.
"Very well, Sajan," Anvil Rock invited. "You have our attention."
"Thank you," Merlin repeated, then smiled slightly. "My knights," he began. "By this time, I'm sure, the entire world knows the Emperor has his own personal Sajan bodyguard. As you may have heard, however, I've never actually claimed to be a Sajan. The truth, so far as I know, is that there are no true Sajans in the sense of all the old fables and folk tales. He made the admission calmly, and his audience stirred. Anvil Rock leaned forward, one elbow propped on his chair arm, and Tartarian frowned thoughtfully. "If you go back to the tales of Sajan Cody, for example," Merlin continued, "you'll find he's capable of all sorts of magical, mystical feats, from mind-reading to levitation to talking to great lizards. And let's not forget his magic sword and his ability to walk through walls, either." He smiled crookedly. "Trust me, my knights, there have been quite a few times I've wished I could walk through walls. Unfortunately, I can't. Yet that isn't to say that there's not a certain core of truth in those fairy tales." His smile vanished. "And, while I've never actually claimed to be a Sajan, I have to admit I do have some of the capabilities ascribed to Sajans. As such, the label has a certain applicability, and it provides a convenient handle. Or perhaps it would be better to say a mental pigeonhole people can tuck me into." He paused for a moment, studying his audience, then shrugged. "The reason I've brought this up, my knights, is because I may not be so unique as you've assumed. Or to put it another way, there may be more Sajans around than you might have guessed." All of his listeners stiffened. They looked at one another quickly, then leaned towards him as one, and his smile was back, a bit fainter and even more crooked than before.